All right. Welcome, everybody, to the University of Michigan Concussion Center Concussion Headliners Podcast. These are casual conversations intended to be a get-to-know-you format of some of the most well-known and well-respected concussion researchers, neuroscientists, and clinicians from around the world. My name is Steve Broglio. I'm the director of the Michigan Concussion Center and athletic trainer and neuroscientist by trade. I am super excited to be joined today by Dr. Darren Campbell. Darren received his medical degree from the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences, then went on to do his residency at the Malcolm Groh Medical Center at Andrews Air Force Base, fellowship at the University of Utah, and he is a board certified in family med and sports medicine. Prior to becoming the Utah State team physician, he was the chief primary care sports medicine at the United States Air Force Academy for 9 years, which is how I got to know Darren in his time out there. Darren, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet. And we have to add to that now, just because I'm the BYU head team physician now. So okay. We moved down to Provo, Utah, and we got to give some props to BYU and the team that we have here. So.
Absolutely. And your undergrad was from BYU. Is that right?
Yeah, this is my alma mater. So it's been a fun, we've been here for just about 4 years and it's been, you know, a fantastic journey so far.
All right. Good to be back home, as it were.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. So, did you grow up in Utah?
I did.
Okay. Where in that area or somewhere else?
North of here, you know, I was about an hour and a half north of here, North Ogden. But Utah, you know, the Wasatch Front, the kind of mountains area, Utah has some different areas, but definitely northern Utah. So this is close to home, close to family.
Okay.
Great.
And what did your parents do while you were growing up?
So my dad was in finance. He was a banker and then, you know, had his own finance company. My mom's a speech and language pathologist. So she would, you know, there was times she had seven kids. So during a portion of that, she was, you know, a mom a lot of times, but, yeah. You know, sort of throughout that process, she worked with the school districts and speech and language pathology.
Yeah. What do your brothers and sisters do?
Well, so we have a big crew, right? So we have a lot of school teachers that kind of followed in those footsteps. I have a younger brother who's a MSK radiologist. Was with the Air Force and now works in Fort Collins, Colorado, and just doing a great job there. I have a younger sister who is works for the same company as I do, Intermountain Healthcare, as an attorney. And then I have another younger brother who's a paramedic. So a little mix of some healthcare and teaching and just, you know, kind of across the board.
All helping professions, I see.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that something you feel like you got from your parents or it came from somewhere else maybe?
No, I think that's from parents. I think, I think so. I think that's, you know, that was a big focus of my parents. I think, you know, in Utah, you know, we have a lot of people of faith that, you know, just think that's an important part of their life, trying to help and serve others. And it sort of, you know, sometimes leads into your career choices, but I think it's more of a sort of philosophy and value system. So, yeah. You know what? I think that's important. I think those, you know, kind of jobs are important.
Love it. So I have to imagine you're one of eight or one of seven, you said?
One of seven.
Had to be some nicknames floating around. Had to be.
Well, so I don't know if there was. I don't know. You have to talk to somebody else. I don't know. Nicknames, I don't know. Can't be too honest about that.
But, okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. I got you. All right. Sometimes
those, talk to the. That's where the sibling sort of background story probably helps out, but yeah.
Sometimes it's good to leave those nicknames in the past, huh?
Yeah, that's okay.
I understand. So what's that household like? Seven kids, parents, pets maybe in the mix?
Yeah, we did. We're a dog family. So, I think because my parents had dogs before they had kids. And so that was a big part of, you know, just being able to care for that. We had a little, you know, for part of the time growing up, we had a little bit of land. We had some horses as well. So it was a little bit more rural with that. And it was, you know, seven kids. So when you have that many spread over the years, I was the second oldest. So you'd help, you know, babysit, it'd help do a lot of different things. But it was a family that loved to do things together. So we spent a lot of times outdoors, big water ski family, water sports. You know, I think everybody in the family was, you know, skiing, water skiing before they headed to kindergarten. And so that was, you know, we'd have our favorite place to go to is a place in southern Utah called Lake Powell. Mm-hmm. So for as long as I can remember, we've spent probably 2 weeks of summer down at Lake Powell. So just, we did a lot of things together, would do our things and then come together as a family, work hard and then play hard. That was a big tenet, you know, of my folks.
Yeah. So water skiing, everybody, snow skiing.
Yeah. So some snow skiing, some not. So, you know, I came from an athletic family. So my dad's a football player and had lots of knee injuries. So he skied, some of us skied, but we did some, you know, snowmobiling. So that was something he could continue to do. So, you know, when we were small, from the time we were small, we were doing that. So we definitely had winter sports here, but it was some combination of snowmobiling or snow skiing in the winter. Yeah.
Cool. I love it. So across all the, maybe those activities, maybe there's something else you haven't brought up yet. Do you have a favorite childhood memory?
Oh, we have tons. I think some of my favorite memories, when my dad was, he worked in finance and in New York City when I was in elementary school for about 3 years, which he'd commute. He wanted to keep the family here and he would go to New York during the week, fly home on the weekends. And as he kind of finished that up, finally said, you know, that's enough, you know, regardless of sort of dollars and cents, I need to be home more. So he had done part of his, he had a basketball scholarship to what is now BYU Hawaii for one period of time.
Okay.
So he had some professors that he worked with. Mm-hmm. So there was a summer where we finished, just before we finished school, took the whole family, we went to Laiea, Hawaii. He rented a house from the university. And we were there from, you know, May until August, just sort of living there and hanging out. And he was entertaining whether he might want to be a teacher and, you know, do some of that there at the university. But it was just the family was pretty young and it was an incredible experience. And you felt like you weren't just a tourist, but you fit into the community. And that was like one of those kind of special experiences.
Yeah. You get into some surfing while you're out there? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, we had to take our ukulele lessons and then we, you know, learned how to surf and boogie board and just, you know, you just did what everybody did. It was a great time.
I love it, man. That sounds pretty incredible. Love it. So you mentioned maybe babysitting for the family and I'm sure some other, you know, helping out just around the house type of thing. What was your first job outside of the house? Kind of official job, as it were.
Yeah. So there's a couple things there. There was one, we did a lot for the family. So I had a grandfather that in a valley just near us, kind of up and over a mountain pass. So he had, you know, some property, a ranch there. And so, you know, every summer, my job would be to go up and fix all the fence from the winter damage and those kind of things. So that was for, you know, quite a few years, you spent most of the summer just going up and doing whatever repairs were needed for that. So that was probably the first hands-on and when you're doing it on your own sometimes, which was great experience, but, you know, lots of sort of just, you know, get your hands dirty, get to work kind of a thing. Worked with there was a construction company that was building and putting up some, the press box and part of our football stadium for our high school. So that was probably the job I did the most labor for the least amount of pay. So we, you know, a friend and I, we, you know, were basically the hod tenders for him, carrying the brick, getting the mud, doing all that stuff, put up, you know, that structure. And I think we got a pair of shoes and a t-shirt, you know, at the end of the time. So
yeah,
you live and learn, right? You got to negotiate your contract a little better than that.
I was just going to ask about some life lessons from your first job. So
yeah, there you go.
You nailed that one.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Is that still standing? Is that structure still
there? Yeah, it's still there.
There you go.
Up and you could show the kids. And my folks still live up in that neighborhood. So, you know, if we ever go over there, you can say, yeah, that's the press box we
built up. Yeah. Did you get the chance to put your initials in it somewhere?
Yeah, a couple of places, but I won't say where, but
that's right. I love it. That's great. So, grew up in Utah, went to school in Utah, but how did you pick BYU, or maybe it was just, that's where you always wanted to go?
Yeah, for the Utah schools, I looked mostly at Utah schools. There was, you know, when I was first starting out, I had some interest in Boston, maybe going into biomedical engineering. Ultimately, you know, my folks went to BYU. That was a, you know, school. Actually, from my high school being in Utah, Northern Utah, only a small number of my school went to BYU. I think it would have been a bigger number. Maybe you choose to go a different direction, but not a huge number when I left, you know, a graduating class of about 720 or something. Oh, wow. You know, yeah. Only about 10, you know, or so went to BYU, I think, to start off that first year. So ultimately went to, you know, BYU, the kind of family tradition there. We were kind of a family. Ultimately had a few go to the University of Utah and a few go to BYU.
Okay.
So went down to BYU. And then, you know, when you're there just with, you know, BYU, a lot of folks that go there go and serve a church mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I did that, served in Taiwan for a couple years, learned Mandarin Chinese and came back and switched from a zoology major to Chinese major just to try and solidify that.
Yeah.
Had some family history with a grandfather that did a lot of business and international relations things. And so that seemed to be a, you know, just something that I wanted to do. So did that. And then the pre-med things, I sort of, since the time I was, as far as I can remember, knew I wanted to be a physician.
Okay.
For lots of reasons, you know, I joke about one, my second grade teacher hated my handwriting. I was, you know, those were the days that you had to write things, right? Yeah. You had to practice handwriting.
Yep.
Mine was so bad that she'd send me home that was my homework. I just have to write, which was the worst torture. You know, I'm a math and science guy.
Right.
So I just remember in class one day and I was just upset and she's like, you know, scored my handwriting and said, this is terrible. And I'm like, she says, you write like you're a doctor. And I said, that's it. I am going to be a doctor.
There you go.
And she's like, well, when you are, then you don't have to have anyone check your handwriting anymore. But until then, get back to work.
I share your pain on the handwriting. I have very clear third grade memories of being sent home with letters to practice.
Yeah.
And then sixth grade, I think it was getting a C in handwriting.
Yeah.
And my complaint was like, it's subjective. Who are you to evaluate like clarity of my handwriting?
But I can read it. Right?
Exactly. I knew what I was writing. So
that's right.
And now everything's typed, right? Like,
yeah. It's not even a thing. I didn't even think that, you know, people learn cursive handwriting anymore. Right.
Yeah. It's a dying art. And I got a letter the other day in the mail, a beautifully handwritten card. And I was just blown away. Like you just don't see it anymore. So it really stands out when you get them. So it was
cool. Yeah.
So were you good at school? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, school was, it was a different time. And so if you're, you know, playing sports and doing things, it wasn't always super cool to be the great student, right?
Right.
So it was one of those, to be honest, I have come from a family of great students. And I always thought, because of some of my writing and English, right? You know, my older sibling, my younger siblings, everybody was like a 4.0, you know, straight A student. And I would always get these A minuses in English class, you know? And so I honestly, in some way, you kind of think like, I'm not a good student. I'm like the black sheep of the family, have to go home, hang my head in shame to my parents and show my report card. And so it was kind of a weird mix, and it wasn't super cool to be the smartest kind of person, but it didn't take a lot of work, and you just kind of did your thing. And, you know, in the end, you know, good grades and, you know, some academic scholarships and stuff, but it wasn't, you know, is one of those things that it just kind of worked out and it was fine, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, the biggest push for that.
Sure. I gotcha. So, undergrad at BYU,
right?
And you went over to Uniform Services University for your medical degree. Was there a gap in there? Did you enlist at some point or?
No, so I didn't. I had no prior military experience before that. No family military experience. You know, we looked at that as an option. We had heard about it. And when you're going through that process, you know, that's one, they didn't have secondary, you know, fees to apply.
Right.
They were pretty smart. They, you know, had interviews early. So they were my first in-person interview and first acceptance. I mean, it was, you know, early November, I think. Wow. And I had an acceptance letter. And so, of course, that you say yes. And when I went there and interviewed, I was impressed with the facility, the people. And then, you know, we have some other ties. My mom's from Chicago. And so, you know, we were, you know, looking at Chicago and in some, you know, programs there. We still have family kind of in that area. And so that was, you know, should we go there? Should we, you know, stay in DC or try and stay in Utah? And ultimately, you know, the more places we went and looked at, you know, the more, you know, we liked the, the Uniformed Services University. Yeah. And I was married at the time, you know, newly married, no kids, but it just, you know, from a kind of family standpoint, and, you know, you get a paycheck when you're there and you owe some time. So it seemed to make sense for us. I thought we were going to get a good education and be part of that, and with some payback time, which obviously blossomed into a longer career.
Yeah. So do you, I'm probably going to get the words mixed up here, but I think you'll get what I'm getting at. Were you always a civilian within the military system, or at some point, how does that work?
Yeah. So once you're accepted, you are, you're commissioned, right? You're a commissioned, you're a commissioned officer. So basically they accept you, you have to go through the physical and those kind of things to meet their requirements. You know, it was, and I had to hurry, scramble on a couple of things. One of them, I remember, you know, when I was in high school, I took the AP exam for calculus, and, you know, passed. And so in college, especially as a foreign language major at BYU, you don't have to do any other math. So they accepted me, but then they write a letter at the very end, and it was just about to start my last semester. And they're like, you have to take calculus. We won't accept AP. You got to do that. So try and, you know, rush and register for that.
Yeah.
But you graduate, you go through that, and then they commission you, and you go do sort of a basic training process over the summer. And then you show up and you're an active duty military officer, you know, at that medical school for the whole time. So you go to school in uniform. And over the summer, they, you know, send you on some rotations with different military units and get some exposure.
Yeah. And do you get to pick your branch?
So you do, you know, when they accept you, they have a certain number of Army slots, Navy, Air Force, and public health service.
Okay.
And so it, once you get in, if there's still spots available in that service, you can pick that branch.
I got you.
So if it's early, you know, you get a little, you know, you get a little more freedom to choose. If it's later, then, you know, you may, you know, get what you get.
Yeah. So I have a fraction of an understanding of the branches, just our work with CARE and with West Point and Navy and Coast Guard. So I'm going to rely on you to give an honest answer here. Which branch is the best?
Air Force, of course.
Okay. I just wanted to, I wasn't sure. I suspected. I wanted to check on that.
There's not too many things, you know, when people, when the other services joke with you, and their joke is, you know, that every base has a golf course, you know, you guys are just worried about having a golf course on every base. I just hear that and think, what's wrong with that? That sounds great.
I tell you, you know.
Yeah.
The Navy's always at the beach. You got to give them that. So sometimes the beach is frozen, but, you know, they're always at
the beach. That's
right. So, all right. So you spent, how many years were you in the Air Force total, but then at the Air Force Academy?
So 24 years total.
Okay.
And 9 years at the Air Force Academy.
Okay. And so the time from when you graduated, obviously you went through your residency and fellowship, but then kind of where were you? You were probably around the world, I would imagine.
So a little bit, you know, sometimes as you start to get into to different specialties, it limits where you go a little bit. So we finished residency. We were hoping, the plan was to pay our time back, as, you know, we said we were going to, and maybe end up back in Utah. And so that was on our list, but we went there first. And from Utah, I had to do a year in Korea. That one was a tough one. That was an unaccompanied tour, so no family. We just had our third kiddo who was 7 months old. And, you know, that's when things got a little more real, because it's, you know, you're there, right? And you don't have a choice. You're going to serve. But came back and did my sports fellowship. And then when I went and taught at a family medicine residency for the Air Force in Florida, in the Panhandle, the Destin area, which was phenomenal area, great people. It was by the beach. It was, you know, just a great time for a young family. And then I, you know, had a few deployments mixed in. So I actually was in Afghanistan and heard that there was a spot that opened at the Air Force Academy. And so, you know, the request is, are you interested in that? And of course, we jumped at that. So I came right back from Afghanistan and basically checked back into my base and then checked out to move to Colorado Springs.
Gotcha. And so you're probably one of the few people I know that have kind of a foot in both civilian and military world. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through some of those differences between, like, the attitudes, like how you approach things as a physician, how the either the officers or the cadets or the enlisted approach things, from an injury standpoint?
Yeah. So there are some differences. There's sort of a different kind of tone. I think in the military, you know, having been out now practicing in a similar kind of environment with, you know, a university setting and college athletes, there's a lot to be said about the college athletes at some of the service academies, which is, you know, where I was. They're there. And a lot of them kind of get in with the same reasoning that I did, right? It's part of their education. There's an end, you know, means to an end for them. But as you're part of it and you see people that are going out and serving and you interact with the people in the military, you quickly gain a really deep respect for the sacrifices that they make. You know, there's a group, and I, you know, it's, you see how people that are out there who have spouses and family members that are out in the world serving and sometimes in dangerous places, and their family's home doing everyday tasks. And, you know, unless that's up front, there's a lot going on. The rest of the community doesn't know or appreciate that. Right. And so they're sort of suffering through that on their own. And so that community can get pretty tight. You know, they respect and love and instant connections. As much as we joke between services, you know, when you see a, you know, family, regardless of service, and they're out there serving, that, you know, that touches your heart and you instantly, you know, want, there's a, you know, there's a connection there.
Yeah.
So that was in the communities that have a lot of military, you'll sense that, but certainly within the group that you work with. We also see that on the medicine team, you know, when we're taking care of our athletes and doing things across specialties, you know, people are there. There's a little different tone at some of those places when we're practicing medicine. And it's, you know, it feels like you're really part of a team. It's just like a sport, like those are your team members, as opposed to kind of doing your own thing. And in a lot of places, civilian-wise, you kind of do have your own practice, you know, get your lifestyle the way you want it, your patient population. It's kind of you and your family and not as much of that sort of team atmosphere. There are some differences, and, you know, there's a great team of people that are doing that still in the country. You know, you have a timeline and yes, you step away and it carries on and people step in and do as good or better a job, you know, after you leave kind of doing those things, but it's, you'll always feel part of it. And there's that connection. I think that's maybe the biggest difference. It's a deep connection.
Yeah. I think, my biggest takeaway of the work that we've done together through CARE and with the other academies is like, I think you said it perfectly, is just at any moment, these individuals could be called up, shipped overseas to do something that, you know, like I couldn't do it, but I am so thankful that we have a huge community of people in this country that are willing to do that and to, you know, to allow us to do the things that we do. So, and that is massive sacrifice, whether it's, you know, family time or, just being away from family or just, you know, the ultimate sacrifice. Cause that happens and we know that happens. So they're a pretty special group of people and, very appreciative for everything they do. So let's shift a little bit away from kind of your personal history, dive a little deeper into Darren, the man. How would your parents describe what you do for a living?
Gosh, that's a good, I don't know if I've been asked that before. That's unique. I think they'd be pretty good at the description. You know, I think they, there's enough of what I do for the past now, you know, 15 years or so at Air Force Academy, Utah State, BYU, where they can kind of see through, you know, all what's going on. Sometimes some of the things you do in that environment, you know, can be pretty visible. You know, you might have people you're seeing, you know, you're on TV, you're taking care of this case or that case. It's maybe even in the media a little bit as you're kind of practicing. So they'll see that. They'll see the behind the scenes work, the time that, you know, I spend, my, you know, family spends. I think to do the job, where the way that we do here, the way that any primary care sports medicine doc does at this level, it's like a whole family endeavor, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're lots of weekends, lots of, you know, I don't know how many Christmases have been spent in a hotel at some bowl game. Right. And so, you know, with my family, one of the things we did early on is say, we are going to, you know, it's got to be a family thing or it's not going to happen. And so we would, the whole family goes. In the event that I cover, the family has, you know, opportunity with tickets, you know, however we get that, if it's a bowl game or travel, you know, we'll take the whole crew, you know, however that's, you know, set up, whether the university takes you or we take ourselves and do those things together. And it's been great because family, my kids, my parents, even siblings, sometimes we'll do that. And it becomes kind of a family journey and we experience that together. So I think so it's really more than just your job. It ends up being a huge chunk of your life, right? So you're doing all that. So I, you know, they'd probably describe that, just describe, you know, how that's part of, you know, who I am. And I think in this role, it becomes your identity. I think in your role as a researcher and the time that you spent, you know, if you could, it's hard that you couldn't just separate that out from Steve Broglio, right?
Yeah.
That's part of your identity, a big part.
It definitely bleeds, you know, work life and family life tend to bleed together. And I think that was really put on display for me front and center during COVID when my daughter's in the dining room taking her classes and then she can hear me on a Zoom call, you know, literally one through one door. Right. And so she got to see that kind of front and center. I may have turned her off of research for life at that point, but she got to see it for sure. So
I don't know if that's a bad thing, good or bad. Right?
she probably will never be a researcher and that's fine. She's wildly talented in many areas. I am not. So I'm just going to just sit back and have fun watching her do her thing, I think.
So. Yeah, that's the best.
So certainly huge time commitments with what you do, but maybe a little more specific. What's the biggest challenge you're facing in your role right now and how are you handling that?
Well, you know, there's lots of different challenges. I think the caring for, you know, where I have a practice, you know, where I am, I have a practice where I see all ages of patients for a sports medicine practice. And then I'm also the university head team doc. So, you know, that's the back and forth with that from a time standpoint. There's always challenges as you take care of the university athletes and the nuances of care and, you know, different injuries and those kinds of things. I think one of the biggest challenges, sort of an interest, and that's kind of where this is coming from, has developed into concussion through my career. And one of the challenges that I find in the area of concussion is we've I think, done a great job of detailing, you know, what are best ways to try and take care of patients, not just athletes, but anybody. And it's, you know, these concepts of multi-specialty teams, you know, groups that we bring in the resources early. We kind of address those problems that are most affected a little more aggressively. And we get people better, quicker, back in action, safer. And what's one of the biggest challenges is really trying to sell that to systems, right? Unless there's a few great concussion systems that can really put them all together in one building and house it and function. But if you're not, and you're trying to piece it together across the board and have people tie in just from a personality standpoint, I'm interested, so I'm going to help. That to me is a challenge because it takes constant nurturing and, right, you know, keeping people interested, keeping them part of the team. Sometimes those pieces change out. And if we don't, then I think the care for that area kind of suffers a little bit. So it feels like there's still a lot of work to try and keep the best practices that we're really pretty clear on now, but trying to convince, you know, organizations and business practices and those kind of things to say that's a worthy sort of group to keep together and link together more than, you know, when you look at an org chart, you have the solid lines where you're linked and you have these little dotted lines that are just kind of supported. And sometimes there's too many dotted lines in that kind of a system. So that's a constant, takes a lot of effort. And I'd say that's always a big challenge. It's kind of a never-ending challenge.
A little bit of a push and pull of the healthcare system in general, right? You have what's best for the patient may not always be best for the bottom line and trying to, you know, but you got to keep the lights on, right? So you have to, there's got to be some give and take on both of those.
Right.
So, I hear you loud and clear on that one. So As you go through your day or you think about your day, when do you do your best work? You a morning person, an afternoon, a late night?
Yeah. So no, mine's it's, we joke about this all the time. You know, my best time, I am kind of a morning person, but I don't love the morning. I mean, there's lots of things that happen in the morning. So my best time, I need to, you know, have breakfast and like that 10 o'clock. That's it. That's me. My best, you know, at work, my best, the problem is that's my best workout time too. You know, it's my best everything. I can do more at home for my home projects. So I have a window, you know, an ideal work day would be like 10 to maybe like 2 or 3 o'clock. So when you're doing your 12-hour days, there's big chunks on either end when you're like, that's, you know, you're struggling through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you do the more rote tasks at the off hours, right? Things that you just need to have to get through in the day, but don't take a lot of concentration. So if you weren't doing what you are doing, what would you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have some hobbies, you know, we joke about a few of them. So I like woodworking. I'd love to have, you know, a robust wood shop, you know, kind of make some furniture that I don't know if anybody would buy it, but it'd be fun to make it and see. I do like, still like a lot of those things I grew up with. So, you know, grew up riding some motorcycles and snowmobiles. I joke like I'd have a, you know, a motorcycle shop and snowmobiles and UTVs. And that would just be the perfect going work on those and drive those around, those kind of things. Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe when the time comes to retire the second time, you can open up the shop.
There you go.
You can only work 10 to 2, limited hours.
Be perfect.
There you go, man.
That's it. And then you just try everything out for the rest of the time.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
So we're getting close on time here. So I got some shorter ones for you. Who do you look up to the most?
So I there's a couple people. So I look up to my parents, right? Both my mom and my dad. Both, you know, incredible people, lots of sacrifices for their family. That was the, you know, first and foremost in their life, you know, that came first, and they did a lot of things and made a lot of things happen for the family. Lots of individual sacrifices for that of their kind of their own careers in some ways. My mom's dad, my grandfather, he's the one that had the international kind of interactions. Pretty incredible person. He grew up in Randolph, Utah, small, just rural. Sometimes the coldest place in Utah, rancher, but he, you know, went to law school back in DC and worked. He was the Secretary of the Treasury under Nixon for his first couple of years.
Wow.
Worked in Chicago a lot of years as the CEO of a large, you know, bank, and then came an ambassador to NATO for a while. Kind of a leader, a lot of things in our church and our faith. And it was just he's Scott. Both sides of my family are Scottish, the Campbells and the Kennedys. His name was David Kennedy. And he's just, you know, smaller size powerhouse that was incredibly gifted for sort of diplomacy and interacting with people. And really it going through life just recently, last week, I met someone who during his time in Chicago came up and said, you know, I knew your grandfather. He was my mentor. And we hear those stories all the time. And so the biggest thing for him is he touched people's lives all the time, but never really made a big deal or talked about it. Right. And you discover these things, and he touched so many people's lives that I think that's been a big focus, trying to do those kinds of things. It's not about the limelight with that. It's about touching people's lives. And that, you know, the joy is just with that interaction with that person. And it's not for the whole world to see or know, but, you know, they know. You know, that's a special situation. So the older I get, the more I think about that and learn about those stories, even to this day, I just think that's a life well lived. You do those kinds of things and, you know, you've done a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like he was a pretty incredible man, sounds like. So,
yeah.
Very cool. What's your least favorite life maintenance activity?
Yeah, it's the surprise maintenance, right? It's the surprise maintenance when you're sitting there you know, we had a little bit of a windstorm the other night and you're in the middle of something. And my wife, Lisa, comes in and she's like, you know, the gate, you know, for the fence, somehow the fence moved and it blew past that. And so you're in the middle of doing something else. And here you go. Here's the surprise. I need to go fix this thing right then.
Yeah.
So I think I do like the schedule. I like working through projects and thinking them through. So sometimes those surprises where you got to stop everything and go do it just takes a minute to get your mind right and then go get that stuff done.
All right. What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is that just what I touched on earlier, you know, you finish your life and you're looking back and you just think of, you know, maybe, you know, did I help enough? Did I serve enough? Did I touch people's lives? You know, was I just out there for me or not? And I think that's it, right? It's, you know, just, you know, if you're not a person that can somehow make the world better, you know, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's the hope.
All right. Finish the sentence for me. It all comes down to.
Honestly, I'd say it all comes down to hard work as soon as you say that, right? But I want to say it all comes down to, you know, enjoying life. And, you know, I just talked to my daughter who's out on a church mission right now, struggling. And, you know, part of our discussion with her was, hey, enjoy every day, right? Hard or not, you know, whatever's going on, find something you love during that day and take note of it. Bring it, you know, recognize it, receive it, enjoy that. And then, you know, then you can't go wrong when you do that.
It's great advice. Great advice. Okay. I got two more for you.
Okay.
One's a softball. One you might have to think on a little bit. What piece of advice would you give a young clinician who's just starting out?
The piece of advice is work hard, prepare yourself so that when the opportunity that you really want shows up, you're ready to go. You know, you may not see it at first. You may not, you know, recognize how I'm going to get there. That's what it is. But all the hard work you put in for seemingly mundane things, all those classes, all the other kind of things, that will help you in the end. So just have faith in yourself and go for it. And, you know, opportunity is going to present itself.
All right. Very good. Last one for you. Where can people go to find out more about you or your work? Or anything else you want to share? You on the socials?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we're here at Intermountain Healthcare in Utah Valley. So if you look up Utah Valley Sports Medicine, that's our home. That's where we practice every day. And we have a great team here. So a great team of docs. We've collected quite a few from the Air Force, which has been awesome because we get to keep that team kind of mentality going, working together. We love what we do. And, you know, if anybody has questions or needs help on any sports medicine issues, concussion injuries, or just want to talk about healthcare, things we love, would love to talk to you.
All right. Very good. Darren, thank you very much. Appreciate it. This has been amazing. I learned a ton. I've known you for 8 years and I learned a lot. This is great.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thank you for
your time. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right, boss. Take care.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.